I want to talk about Jedediah. Jedediah was born with a silver spoon in his mouth, if anybody ever was. He was born in Jerusalem, the city of the king, and the future city of the kingdom. His name was Jedediah. God called him that, and it meant beloved of Yahweh, beloved of Yah. The first part of it, Jedediah, was something like David, the beloved. It's the same Hebrew part there that David is. And then the last part is Yah, the Yahweh, beloved of Yahweh. The circumstances of his birth were both joyous and painful. That's not what his parents named him. That's what God called him. In the book of 2 Samuel, chapter 12, verses 24 and 25, we read this. Then David comforted Bathsheba and went into her and lay with her, and she gave birth to a son. And he named him Solomon. Solomon meant a man of peace. Now the Eternal, listen to this phrase in verse 25. Now the Eternal loved him and sent word through Nathan the prophet, and he named him Jedediah for the Lord's sake, for the Eternal's sake. Now that verse is pregnant with meaning, filled with all kinds of meaning, because you have to understand all the background and the history leading up to that verse. And it's important for you as well. David comforted his wife, Bathsheba. Why was he comforting Bathsheba? Well, we already know why. Because when they had committed this adultery and David killed Bathsheba's wife, had him killed, he didn't physically do it, had him killed in the service of the army, withdraw the troops when Uriah is in the front line, and Uriah got killed. David and Bathsheba had a child. She was with child. And God punished them by striking that child, that first child, sick. And that child was sick and finally died. And Bathsheba had to be overwrought. You have this baby is there, and now the baby is dying, and you can't do anything about it. You can't stop it. You can't do anything with it. And David fasted and fasted. You know, he didn't know what to do until finally the child was dead. But here now, David goes in and comforts his wife. It's been days, weeks, months. We don't know how long since the child died. And David is now comforting her. You know what a lot of people do? They blame one another. Well, you know, it's your own fault. Maybe if you had taken better care of yourself, the child wouldn't have got sick. You know, this and that, you know, all kinds of stuff. A lot of couples just break apart under stress, under troubles, and under circumstances that are so severe and travail. But David went in and comforted his wife, Bathsheba, and went and then lay with her, and she conceived, and she gave birth to a second child, another child, her second son, Solomon, and they named him Solomon. Now the Lord loved him. And listen to this. Sent word through Nathan the prophet. Who's Nathan the prophet? He was the very one who came to David and said, "You're the man." And God says that troubles will never depart from your house, and the child that you've had is going to be stricken, and so on and so on. And bawled David out, and, you know, really took him to task. And, you know, you feel like you're on the bad side of God. You know, you're on God's bad side now. You did this bad thing. And can we ever get back to God? Can we ever get back to God when we're on God's bad side? But listen to this. God loved this next child. You're Bathsheba. You have a child. God struck it, and the child died. But now you have another child. Is God going to love this child? Where will God be with this child? God loved him and sent word through Nathan the prophet, and he named him Jedediah, which meant beloved of Yah, beloved of Yahweh, for the Lord's sake, for Yahweh's sake. So here Solomon, loved, a man of peace, he was loved. It's a message of joy, is it not? A message of peace, a message of forgiveness. I mean, when David hears Nathan, the very prophet who came to bawled him out and, you know, and took him to task, now all of a sudden, oh, you're so, you know, God's mercies, God's forgiveness, God's love. And what about Solomon? Why did he deserve to be loved? He didn't do anything to be loved, did he? And he wasn't loved just because his parents were good or bad. They were bad. And he wasn't hated, but he was loved just for himself. And he was loved because of the goodness and the character of God. When we're loved, God, you don't do anything to be loved. You know, it's God's love for us, for nothing on our part. And here was a baby just born, and God loved him. A feeling of forgiveness. God's love was not based on the character of his parents, either good or bad. God's love was based on the character of God, because God is love. Now, some people will say, you see, look at this adulterous affair turned out okay. You got Bathsheba, and they had this great son. And God's purpose came about that, you know, if he hadn't taken this man's wife, it would have never come about. Now, you see, God can make good things come out of bad sins. He can make good things come out. But that's not what God wanted. God did not want David to go out and take this other man's wife. He did not want Bathsheba to betray her husband while he was in service. That's not what God wanted. God can do better. You say, well, we couldn't have had a Solomon if this happened. You know, God could have made a Solomon. God could have had somebody else come in. Didn't have to be this way. But the fact that God now is sending David and Bathsheba, a feeling of joy, happiness, forgiveness, mercy, is a wonderful thing here on Solomon's arrival. Solomon had other siblings. Let's take a look at 1 Chronicles chapter 3, verse 5. There were born unto David. Now, this 1 Chronicles 3, verse 5, talking about the children that were born to David. Some were born in Hebron, some were born in Jerusalem. They were born in Jerusalem, it says, and these are the ones born in Jerusalem with Bathsheba: Shemaiah, Shobab, Nathan, and Solomon. Four of Bathsheba, the daughter of Amiel. This is in 1 Chronicles 3, verse 5. Now, the problem with sometimes in the Hebrew spellings and the translations into English is that the spellings of the names vary in different locations. For instance, Shemaiah is spelled Shamua elsewhere, for instance, in 2 Samuel chapter 5 and verse 14. Bathsheba is spelled Bathsheba elsewhere in 2 Samuel 12:24, and in many other places. You know, we just read 2 Samuel 12:24. He comforted his wife Bathsheba, but it's spelled in 1 Chronicles Bathsheba. And Amiel is spelled Eliam, E-L-I-A-M, in 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 3. In other words, Bathsheba's father was spelled two different ways, A-M-M-I-E-L and E-L-I-A-M. So it's just kind of a, you have to put this together when you read these various texts. You'll see that it was spelled differently. Now, the text indicates, this is 1 Chronicles 3 and verse 5, indicates that Solomon had three siblings from David and Bathsheba. The names are not given in chronological order, as we know, because Solomon was the oldest, the first of all these siblings. He was the first one. But there is a significance in these siblings that comes all the way down to Jesus Christ, our Lord. The significance is you have Solomon, and among his siblings, there was another guy by the name of Nathan. Not Nathan the prophet, but Nathan the brother of Solomon. And those two people have two genealogies that come all the way through to the New Testament and all the way down to Jesus Christ. One is traced through Solomon, and that is in the book of Matthew, chapter 1, verse 7, and so on. You'll see Matthew chapter 1. It traces the lineage through Solomon. That is Joseph's lineage. Abraham begot so-and-so, begot so-and-so, and all that comes all the way down through Solomon, down to Joseph. Luke's, in chapter 3 of Luke, you have Luke's traces the genealogy through Mary, all the way back, and through Nathan, all the way back to King David. So both Mary and Joseph had genealogies that go right back to King David. If ever a man had the right to the throne of David, it was Jesus Christ, whose both parents were traced back through this lineage to King David. He is the Messiah. And someday the Jews will know this. They will figure this out. They will find it out someday. Maybe it'll be in the kingdom to come. So the word son, by the way, in the book of Luke meant, when it first starts, as it was supposed, the son of, it was supposed, but it should read son-in-law. That's the way you would translate. It was the son-in-law of, not the son of. And it goes all the way back then through Nathan. Now, you don't see much about Solomon's early years. You just see he was born and so on. And the next thing you see in the scriptures is we're coming to a coronation throne. We're coming to his being coronated in 1 Kings chapter 1. But during that time, Solomon's history was sort of tragic. There was a lot of tragedies before the years passed, before his coronation. These years were filled with problems. During those years, you had the evil conduct of Amnon, with his sister, half-sister Tamar. You have Amnon's murder by Absalom. Absalom's fleeing to get away. Absalom's attempt to usurp the throne from David in Jerusalem and temporarily putting himself in place. Finally, eventually ended in Absalom's death. And then you have Joab murdering a guy by the name of Amasa and stopping a revolt. And then a three-year famine as a judgment for King Saul's actions for the years earlier. And then there was David's sin in numbering the people. And on and on and on during this, from the time this little baby is born all the way up until you come into his coronation. And finally, after these troubling years, it came time for David to step down from the throne in favor of his son. Now, David, great king, great warrior, he didn't prepare for this. He didn't do a very good job in preparing for this. And as a result, his other son decided, I'm in charge. And the Bible tells you that his son Adonijah was never disciplined, never had anybody say no to him. So he decided, I'm in charge. I'm going to be there. And finally, it was again the counsel of Nathan the prophet. Nathan the prophet goes to Bathsheba and says, you need to go to David. You need to say to David, it's time to appoint Solomon. You must back Solomon as the one. So in 1 Kings chapter 1, dropping all the way down to verse 33, we read this. And this is David now telling her what to do. Take with you the servants of your Lord, and have my son Solomon ride on my own mule, and bring him down to Gihon. Let Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet anoint him there as king over Israel and blow the trumpet and say, long live King Solomon. Now, finally, David gets into the act here because Adonijah had pretty much taken over and everybody was thinking he's going to be king. You know, he just said he was king. So everybody, oh, okay, I guess you are king. Then you shall come up after him and he shall come and sit on my throne and be king in my place. For I have appointed him to be ruler over Israel and Judah. Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, answered the king saying, amen. Thus may the Lord, the God of my Lord, the king say. And verse 37, as the Lord has been with my Lord, the king, so may he be with Solomon and make his throne greater than the throne of my Lord, King David. In other words, may your son even do greater. Now, King David didn't mind that. He didn't mind that. So they finally coronated Solomon. Solomon now is the king. And David comes to Solomon and he brings Solomon in and he gives Solomon a charge. So in 1 Kings chapter 2, dropping down to verse beginning in verse 1, as David's time drew near, he charged Solomon, his son, saying, I am going the way of the earth, of all the earth. Be strong. And then notice how people accept, they just accept that you live, you know, you're born, you grow up, you live a long time, you come into old age, you get weaker, you go downhill, and you finally die. And he said, I'm going the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore. Show yourself a man. Keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his ordinances, and his testimonies, according to what is written in the law of Moses, that you may succeed in all that you do, and when wherever you turn, so that the Lord may carry out his promise, which he spoke concerning me, saying, now listen to this promise, if your sons are careful of their way, to walk before me in truth and with all their heart and with all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. End quote. That's what God said. And David is now telling him, I want you to be strong now. Be a man here. Now, strong doesn't mean you can live 500 pounds, but strong means purposeful. Purposeful. Strong of character. Strong in the way of God, not yielding to falsehoods and all that. Strong in that way. And he was supposed to build the temple, you remember. One of the things that God, David wanted to build the temple. He wanted to build the house for God, but he never was able to do it. God said, no, you've done this terrible thing. And I think it was because of Bathsheba that he you're not going to get there. You murdered a man in the army. He was supposed to build the temple. And you notice in 1 Chronicles chapter 28 and verse 10. Consider now, for the Eternal has chosen you to build a house for the sanctuary. Be courageous and act. Be strong. The New English Translation puts it like this. Realize now that the Eternal has chosen you to build a temple as his sanctuary. Be strong and do it. Be strong, be forceful. In other words, set your mind, bring your energy to it and get it done. Be strong and do it. So Solomon is charged. You know, if you and your sons follow the way of God, listen to God, follow his commandments, do his ordinances, be a man now. And even though he was a very young man, you know, he reigned 40 years, so he's a fairly young man when he started. In 1 Chronicles chapter 29, David has to tell everybody. He's talking to the people of Israel and asking them a question, saying to them, and David the king said unto all the congregation, Solomon my son, whom alone God has chosen, is yet young and tender. And the work is great, for the palace is not to man, but for the eternal God. Let me read that in the English Standard Version. And David the king said to all the assembly, Solomon, my son, whom alone God has chosen, is young and inexperienced. And the work is great, for the palace will not be for man, but for the eternal God. Here's Solomon. What? Here I am. I take over the throne. And God, you know, he was given several commands by David when he first was there. You know, he had to deal with Joab. He had to deal with this one and that one. And then he had to be with Adonijah, who comes around and sneaks in and tries to get in a different way. You remember he asked for Abishag to be his wife and all that. So here's Solomon. He's trying his best, you know, and he's young. But then God gives him this dream. Take a look at 1 Kings chapter 3. This is an amazing dream, amazing thing to have happen. Then Solomon formed a marriage alliance with Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her to the city of David until he had finished building his own house and his house the eternal and the wall around Jerusalem. The people were still sacrificing and the high places because there were no houses built. And the house was built in the name of the eternal. Now Solomon loved the eternal, walking his statutes as of his father David, except the sacrifice and burned incense of the high places. The king went on to Gibeon to sacrifice and so on. And Solomon said, "You have shown loving kindness to your servant, my father, according as he walked before you in truth and righteousness." I'm reading now verse 6. "And you have reserved for him the great loving kindness that you have given him, a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. Now, O eternal my God, you have made your servant king in the place of David, yet I am a little child. I don't know how to go out and come in." Listen to the humility. You know, that's what you have to have first. You have to know what you don't know. You have to know what you can't do. You have to understand and assess yourself properly. And he did. I'm a little kid. I don't know how to go out and come in. I don't have a lot of experience here. "Your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people who are too many to be numbered and counted. So give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, to discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?" Well, he had this, you know, God is asking him. God is bringing this to him. And God said to him, "It is pleasing in the sight of the Eternal that Solomon has asked this thing." "Well, what do you want? I'm going to give you something. I'm going to grant you a wish. Tell me what you want." And God said, "Because you have asked this thing and not asked for yourself for long life, nor have you asked for riches for yourself, nor have you asked for a life for the life of your enemies, but asked for yourself discernment and to understand justice." What did he want first? "Give me discernment to understand what is just and right, clear and equitable and proper and righteous based on the laws of God. Behold, I have done according to your words. Behold, I have given you a wise and discerning heart so that there has been no one like you before you, nor shall one like you arise after you." Now listen to that. And nobody's going to have that kind of wisdom before you. Nobody's going to have this kind of discerning heart after you. "And I have also given you what you have not asked for. I've given you both riches and honor, so that there will not be anything that the kings like you all your days." There will be nothing like you in the king of kings all your days. "If you walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and commandments as your father David walked, then I will prolong your days." Then Solomon awoke from this dream. It's a dream that he had. Now you have this dream. God says, "Tell me what you want. Tell me what you want." How many people would say, I want a new house. I want a new car. I want this. I want that. You know, he said, "Give me I want to do the right job here. I want to do a good job for you." So God says, "Ask." Well, let me ask you a question. Does he tell you to ask? Yeah, he does. Didn't Jesus say in Matthew 7, verses 7 through 9, "Ask and it shall be given to you. Seek and you shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened to you, for everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be opened. But you got to ask. Fact is, James chapter 4 and verse 2, kind of rebuking the people there, says, you have not because you ask not. You have not because you don't ask for it. And you don't seek it. You don't work for it. You don't knock on the door. It's a little work to knock, you know? Now, in the book of 2 Chronicles, the same idea is put here. And here's what Solomon asked for. And you'll see it here in 2 Chronicles chapter 1 and verse 10. It's a little bit different, but just look at this. He says, give me now wisdom and knowledge, that I may go out and come in before this people. For who can rule this great people of yours? Give me now wisdom and knowledge. You know, in the book of Colossians, we're exhorted here. Colossians chapter 1, verse 9. And verse 10, for this reason also, since the day we heard of it, this is Paul writing to the Colossians, we have not ceased to pray for you and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will in all spiritual wisdom and understanding, so that you may walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, to please him in all respects, bearing fruit in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. Is knowledge important? Yes, it is. Is wisdom important? Yes, it is. Hosea chapter 4, my people, and verse 6. Hosea 4, verse 6, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Goodness, as I look back in my life, and we look back in ours, and you look back in yours. How many places in your life you said, if I had only known about this, if I had only had this piece of knowledge, if I had only known about this, I would have saved myself all this trouble. If I had only known what to do here, if I had only understood this, if I had only had this information, how much in your life is filled with that, if I had only known this. The lack of knowledge can kill you, can hurt you, can impoverish you. If only I had known. Because, now listen to what he says. It's not just the lack of knowledge, but God says in Hosea, because you rejected knowledge. You just rejected it. Now, you know, some people tell you, but you say, I don't believe it. You reject the information. You don't even go and look it up. You don't even go and check it. I will also reject you from being my priest. Since you have forgotten the law of your God, I will forget your children. Now, interestingly, that the word translated knowledge from the Hebrew, and it's translated knowledge in our text, but the word implies, it means, involves a learning of knowledge. It's not that God's just going to pour this knowledge into Solomon and he doesn't do anything for it. Now give me all this knowledge. I'll just sit here and you just kind of download it into my computer. You know, that'd be nice, right? Just download it into me. That's not. Then the word implies the learning of knowledge. In other words, if you want to learn, if you want knowledge, you've got to apply yourself. You've got to learn knowledge. If you hate knowledge, you will be ignorant. If you drop out of school, you know, because of you're too lazy or too disinterested or you don't want to learn, you're just simply asking for a lot of trouble and ignorance. It's very difficult to have wisdom without much knowledge. So if you pray for knowledge, like Solomon prayed for knowledge, you're also praying with understanding that you have to do some learning to obtain that knowledge. Give me knowledge. Bring me the right kind of knowledge. But you've got to keep studying, you see. If you want to know the Bible, for instance, what do you have to do? Please, Lord, teach me the Bible. Teach me the Bible. But then you watch TV. Teach me the Bible, and then you go to the movies. Teach me the Bible, and then you read fiction novels. Teach me the Bible. If you don't read the Bible, how are you going to learn the Bible? You have to learn the Bible by reading the Bible. You have to give this man credit, Solomon. Ask me what you want, and I'll give it to you. What do you want? And he said, I want wisdom and knowledge. I want an understanding heart. I want to be able to do justice for your people. So listen to these things. He tended to prefer what was moral and mental over what was material. He did not ask for material things. He did not ask for a lot of money. He did not ask for a new chariot. He did not ask for more horses. He didn't ask for that. He asked, give me moral and mental things. I want knowledge. I want wisdom. He preferred the spiritual side over the secular side. Did he not? Because I want to do justice to your people. He preferred duty over privilege. You know, he was a privileged guy. You know, I mean, I can sit there on the throne, do nothing. I'm still got all this, you know, I'm still the king. But he preferred duty. I want what I want this for. Why do I want this wisdom? I want to do it so I can judge your people and do justice, make sure that everything is proper and right. And I want to be able to discern, you know, truth and goodness and morality from evil. And then what happens following that? Well, following this very thing, he's asked for all this, you know, judgment. Then in verses 16 through, you see, you have these two harlots, and they both had babies, gave birth to babies. I guess they were living with each other, and neither one married. The Bible says they're porneia, and they're harlots. One of them falls over and smothers her baby in the middle of the night. When she wakes up, her baby is killed. She changes babies with the other one. Now, here they come before her. Now, they're arguing. No, that's my the live baby's mine. No, that was yours. And so on. So they come before Solomon. They both present their thing. No, that baby, the live baby's mine. No, it's mine. And the one of them says, well, you know, I woke up and my baby was in here and this baby was dead. I knew it wasn't mine. And so they're both arguing. Well, there's no witnesses. Nobody was there in the house but them. So there are no witnesses. Give it to me. Give the live baby to me. Give the live baby to me. Solomon listens to both of them and he said, servant, bring me a sword. He said, what we're going to do, we're going to cut this live baby in half, and we'll give half to each one of you. That's the way we'll do it. And we'll have two babies. So I'm just going to cut it in half. All of a sudden, the other woman said, no, go ahead and let her have it. Let her have that baby. Let her have the baby. And the other one said, no, go kill it. Go cut it in half so we each have half. And Solomon said, give this baby. Stop. Don't cut the baby in half. Give this baby to that woman there. That's the mother. And people is like, wow, what a bold figure. That's a bold move. You know, you're saying I'm going to cut this baby in half. That's a bold, almost reckless, but very wise, because he had a discernment that a real mother could not bear to see her child hurt. Solomon had discernment. He had an understanding. And because of that decision, I want you to read 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 28. When all Israel heard of that judgment, which the king had handed down, they feared the king, stood in awe of him, and they were a little afraid. For they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to administer justice. He was going to do the right thing. If you were entitled to it, you were going to have it. If you weren't entitled to it and you want to take somebody else's, you were not going to have it. And Solomon was able to discern this thing. And people often, you're not going to come in front of this guy and make up stories. You're not going to come in this guy and weave fables. You're not going to come in front of this man and lie about stuff, because this guy, listen to the word, they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to administer justice, to do what was right. 1 Kings chapter 4, beginning in verse 1. I'm not going to read it all, but I want you to notice Solomon starts off. King Solomon was king over, verse 1, over all Israel, and these were his officials. Who chose these people? Solomon did. These were his officials. And he begins to appoint this person over this. Solomon had 12 deputies. He had their names. He had this person. You can't do it by yourself. You can't be a king over by do everything. So he had this. He began to build his organization. He had a major organizational structure, which he did to make things run smoothly. He was a man of great organizational ability. And he put this organization together, and he had all these people. And you drop down to verse 20, after you read the first 19 verses of all these people. And I want you to listen to verse 20. Judah and Israel were as numerous as the sand that is on the seashore in abundance. They were eating and drinking and rejoicing. He had that country eating, drinking, and rejoicing. People were happy. Why were they happy? Proverbs chapter 29 and verse 2. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked rule, the people groan. Proverbs 29, verse 2 from the New Jerusalem Bible. When the upright are on the increase, the people rejoice. But when the wicked are in power, the people groan. Solomon was a man of organizational ability, a man who had structured his country. He had appointed this, then, and that. He had these people. He had the right people. In the Proverbs, you know, one of the Proverbs was, he says, you know, when a ruler is wicked, then if the ruler puts up with wickedness, then all of his people will become scoundrels. You start putting up with scoundrels, you let people in charge who are scoundrels, then you have scoundrels. You have everybody wants to be a scoundrel. Everybody wants to rip it off. Solomon had the people rejoicing. They weren't groaning under Solomon because he had wisdom, he had knowledge. Let's read verses 20 through 34. Now Solomon ruled over all the kingdom from the river of the land of the Philistines to the border of Egypt. They brought tribute and served Solomon all the days of his life. Solomon's provisions for one day were 30 cores of fine flour and 60 cores of meal, 10 fat oxen, 20 some, he had a structure. For he had dominion over everything west of the river, from there to Gaza, all the kings west of the river, and he had peace. Listen to this. And he had peace on all sides around him. He was a man of peace, and he made peace. And he had peace all sides. Judah and Israel lived in safety, every man under his vine and his fig tree. It was so prosperous. The country was so prosperous from Dan even to Beersheba all the days of Solomon. The wealth in that country. Solomon had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots, 12,000 horsemen. The deputies provided King Solomon and all who came to King Solomon's table each month. They lacked nothing, nothing lacking. They brought barley, straw for the horses, swift needs to place where they... to the place where it should be, each man according to his charge. Now Solomon, God gave Solomon and very great discernment and breadth of mind like the sand that is on the seashore. His mind was breadth of mind. He studied, he read, he learned. So that Solomon's wisdom, verse 30, surpassed the wisdom of all the sons of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all the men, than all men, than Ethan, the Israelite. These are evidently wise men in that time, all these other guys. And his fame was known to all the surrounding nations. Not only was he wise, he was famous. He also spoke 3,000 proverbs. And his songs, he wrote songs, 1,005 of them. He spoke of trees, from the cedar of Lebanon, even to the hyssop that grows on the wall. I'll tell you all about these trees. He spoke of the animals, the birds, the creeping things, and the fish. He studied, he read. He wanted to know all about these, everything that they had at that time, botany, biology and everything. He's studying all this. Men came from all the peoples, from various places, to hear the wisdom of Solomon. Not only his wisdom, his insight, his understanding, his knowledge about it. I mean, just, wow. Did you know that? I didn't know that that kind of animal did that. I didn't know that this was the way. I didn't know this plant was good. I didn't know you could use it for this. From all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. He was famous the world over for his proverbs, for his knowledge, for his wisdom, for his judgment, for his organization. And he plowed on with his number one task. What do you think that was? Building the house of God. And we'll talk more about that and all the things that he did in our next sermon.